أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. أعظم الله أجورنا وأجوركم بمصابنا بالحسين عليه السلام. We ask Allah that he accepts the mourning that we have done, that we have had the tawfiq to do since last night, and that this mourning has an effect on us getting closer to Allah, cleansing ourselves, inshallah, so that we get closer to the dhuhur of the Hujjah. We don't want Ashura to be repeated. When you look at the ziyarah of Arba'een, if Allah wants to sum it all up, this whole rising of Imam Hussein, this whole movement of Imam Hussein, you have one word there, where the Imam got up and did what he did so that he could rescue, the word is in the ziyarah, rescue the people from jahala, wa hayratid dalala, the jahil. The problem back then was the jahil of the people. And this jahil was gaining a snowball effect. It gets worse and worse. Bani Umayyah have taken over. Muawiyah has done what he has to do. Yazid has come, and this is going to continue. They never thought that Imam Hussein would come in the way and stop this. And eventually Bani Umayyah were uprooted. After 60-70 years, it was over. Some people say 60-70 years is a lot. No. When you look at the bigger picture, 60-70 years for a dynasty to be destroyed is not that much. Imam Hussein awakened the people to the truth. This jahil was the problem. When we look at the khutbas of Imam Ali alayhi salam, he is also complaining about this same problem. And I want to connect this to today, slowly though. Let's look what Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam in Nahj al-Balagha says. Khutbah 127, Imam Ali in the middle of it somewhere, he says, he's speaking to the Khawarij here. This is a continuation of last night, kind of. The Khawarij, they had that takfiri approach. Everyone is wrong, we're the only right ones. We understand everyone else is wrong. Imam Ali says, وَسَيَهْلِكُ فِيَّ صِنْفَانِ. There are two groups of people that will be destroyed, will perish. Why? Because of me. Fiya, in my way, as if. Muhibbun mufrit, yadhhabu bihi al-hubb ila ghayr al-haq. There are some who love Imam Ali so much, this hubb takes them off the track. And he goes on to say, and the ones who hate me so much that they are also going off the track. But this is the part I need right now, connecting this to last night. That there are some muhibbun mufrit, it's a little too much hubb, that it takes the person off the track. This love becomes the measuring stick, as I said last night. Instead of the haqq being the measuring stick, this hubb, this excessive love becomes the measuring stick. Excessive love for Ahlul Bayt is good. But the measuring stick has to always be the haqq. The Imam is saying these people will perish, will be destroyed. Another khutbah. I want to say how this jahl is taking over, is causing problems. The Imam somewhere else, he says, وَلَا يَحْمِلُ هَذَا الْعَلَمْ إِلَّا أَهْلُ الْبَصَرِ وَالصَّبْرِ وَالْعِلْمِ بِمَوَاضِعِ الْحَقِّ. This alam, this standard that shows that the haqq is here, Who can carry this? Three conditions. Ahlul basar, basira. A person who has jahl. Basira doesn't come with jahl. The Imam doesn't even say hub here. The Imam says basira, basar. Looking at the bigger picture, not letting emotions take over. And I've said this a million times, I'll say it again. I personally have a problem with people who say the emotion side of Imam Hussein, that's not that important. The message is important. No. The message is important. The emotion part is also as important. We should hold conferences and speak about the message of Imam Hussein. That's good, but that will never take the place of emotions. If there are no emotions, the message won't survive. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants the message to be carried on the river of our tears to future generations. That is the means. We don't have a problem with emotions. Emotions are good. They're supposed to be there. Every tear that is dropped is one step closer, inshallah, to dhuhur. Inshallah. But, as I said again, when you want to determine deen, when you want to determine boundaries, when you want to define Islam, you have to use those standards which the Ahlul Bayt have given you. Or else you will fall, you will perish. The Imam is saying here, basar, basira, that's number one. Sabr, number two. Number three, العلم بمواضع الحق. You have to have knowledge of where the haq lies. Not hub. He doesn't mention it here. فَمْضُوا لِمَا تُؤْمَرُونَ بِهِ وَقِفُوا عِنْدَمَا تُنْهَوْنَ عَنْهِ and so on. But that's the imam, he's ma'asum. We'll talk about that inshallah. We're moving, we're slowly going to move, and we're going to talk about today and us. We don't want another Ashura to happen. It's not going to happen. Because the Sahib al-Zaman will not come if there's a chance that another Ashura will happen with him. And it only happened back in 1400 years ago because of the jahl of the people. We have to make sure that we get rid of it. With the leaving of jahl out of the window, one side, you can be sure that the ilm, the basira will come. We have to get rid of this jahl. We have to have sabr. Can't push things. See what the measuring sticks exactly are. These 10 nights were for what? Spoke about Tawheed, right? I was trying to get across how sometimes we think certain things are the measuring sticks, but they're not. Something else is the measuring stick. This is a sign of that. This is a necessity of that, is necessitated by that, but it's not exactly that. This precision. And you can tell that I'm working my way towards ulama again. This is what the Imam is saying. Another one. Saying number 65 in some versions of the Nahj al-Balagha, 70. قال عليه السلام لا ترى الجاهل إلا مفرطا أو مفرطا. You don't see the jahil except in one of two states. Either he's going overboard, or he's totally neglectful. In any case, it's one of two extremes. Extreme and extremism is no good, ever, never. It's always condemned. So if you ever see someone going overboard, there's somewhat a trace of jahl in that person. If there is ilm, there is less extremism. The more jahl, the more extremism. According to this, these are the conclusions we draw from this, Nahj al-Balagha. Another saying, which is also famous, number 139 or 147, once again, difference in which version of Nahj al-Balagha. قال كميل بن زياد, كميل بن زياد, the close companion of Imam Ali عليه السلام, he says, أخذ بيدي أمير المؤمنين عليه السلام, Ali ibn Abi Talib عليه السلام. He took my hand. فأخرجني إلى الجبان فلما أصحر تنفس الصعداء. The Imam, he takes my hand, he takes me somewhere out to the desert, and he sighs. As if, look, he says, he's saying like, okay, we're free now, no one's around us. I want to talk to you a little bit. ثم قال يا كميل إن هذه القلوب أوعية فخيرها أوعاها. These hearts are containers. The best of containers is the container that which holds more. I want to tell you things now. Take it from me. AKA, in other words, O people who come later, take this from me. الناس ثلاثة. People are of three types. فعالم رباني. You have the godly scholar. The scholar that has taqwa. The scholar that is detached from dunya. Not only detached from dunya. When you look at him in his life, you see that he doesn't have too much dunya in it. Parentheses. Ulama can't fool themselves by saying, Alhamdulillah, I'm not attached to dunya, but I own so much of it. This is a problem. Positions that you are in sometimes will bring about restrictions. Brothers, sisters, please pay attention. Just because something is halal, and you know, I'm all about the wajib and haram. These nights have proven this to you, right? Just because something's halal per se, doesn't mean for all people holding different positions, it's going to be halal too. Okay, this is an exception. If you are an alim, and people look up to you, you have to be a little different. There are some more restrictions that you have to go by and observe. You can't own something that usually normal people don't have. You have something way up there, and then people tell you, it's okay, because you're not attached to it. Zuhd means not to be attached to what you have. Asceticism means to not be in love with what you have. You have this, oh alim, oh scholar. It's okay, you're not attached to it. This is fooling ourselves. Or a person who goes on the minbar and speaks on the minbar, if he does certain things, or even sometimes she does certain things if she's a lecturer, but they're lecturing from the minbar, and they do certain things that normal Muslims don't do, we can't say that this is halal, it's okay. It's okay for this person, but for the minbar, it's a different story. Because even if you don't say, oh people, take me as an example, the minbar looks at you and points to you in front of everybody and says, oh people, you can take this person as your example and role model. That's what the minbar is saying. We're not secular. These things hold meaning. What's the difference between the flag of Aba Abdullah and the flag of our country? There's a big difference. We're not secular. We don't look at flags as all of them as the same, banners all as the same. Same thing when it comes to podiums and lecturing, places of lecture where religious lectures are delivered. These are positions. These positions bring about restrictions. Parentheses closed. The Imam says, "Alimun Rabbani, a godly scholar who doesn't fool himself." So that's one category of people, the Imam is saying. What's the second? وَمُتَعَلَّمٌ عَلَى سَبِيلِ نَجَاتِ. And sometimes he's not a scholar, but he's learning and he's moving towards that destination of salvation. That's also good, he says. But then you have another category of people. وَهَمَجٌ رَعَاءٌ أَتْبَعُ كُلِّ نَاعِقٍ يَمِيلُونَ مَعَ كُلِّ رِيحٍ لَمْ يَسْتَضِيءُ بِنُورِ الْعِلْمِ. Then you have this third category. The translation goes like this. The common rot who run after every caller, every sound they hear, sounds good, reads with their ideology, with the way they think, the way they want Islam to be like, the way they want tashayyu to be like. They hear that call, they run after it. And behind the direction of every wind that blows, they bend in that direction. The wind blows them in that direction. They're not firmly rooted and established. What's wrong with these people though? The Imam goes on to say that they didn't gain light from knowledge. They don't have knowledge. Jahl. They don't have ilm equals jahl. The problems that we have is because of jahl. Imam Hussein stood up for jahl, to get rid of this jahl in the people's minds. What am I getting at here? Why am I mentioning all of these things? If we are going to make sure that our mourning for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein is going to end with the dhuhur of the Hujjah, salamullah alayh, then what do? We make sure that we're not going to do anything that's going to postpone it. But how do we know it's going to postpone or not? Well, we have to make sure that there's no jahl involved. Well, how do I know that? How do I know that I am far away from jahl, inshallah? Well, either you can go yourself and become an expert. And when I say expert, not only in legal rulings, but no, in Islam and Islamic thought. Or you can have others take the lead and you follow them, which are the ulama. Ulama is the opposite of juhal. We don't like jahl, right? We don't like jahl. So we're going to follow the ulama, inshallah. Imam Ali is complaining. All the trouble that I went through is because of the jahl of the people. Today, you get the feeling that, wow, this is how it must have felt during Imam Ali's time. When you look around and you hear the things that are said, the comments that are made, you really think to yourself, really? After 1400 years, we're still almost at the same point as we were then? Jahl? Ilm not being the measuring stick, other things being the measuring stick of haqq and batil. The solution is the ulama. It's the only guarantee we have. We don't have the Ahlul Bayt today. We're not good enough. Every Muharram that comes and goes, we think that inshallah this Muharram will do something so that we're worthy. But it turns out we're not worthy yet. I speak about myself first and foremost. But we go to ulama for ahkam, right? What's haram, what's wajib, and so on, right? What you were citing is Imam Ali speaking to Khawarij, speaking to others about the conditions of then. It's not about wajib and haram. What are you talking about, ulama? What do ulama do? Ulama do? That's where the problem is. We haven't understood the scope of the authority of our ulama. Our precious ulama. We haven't realized it yet. Ulama, when it comes to Islam, it's not just ahkam, what's wajib, what's haram, and so on. If my hand has a stain on it, can I do wudu on it or not? Yes, this is what ulama do. But sometimes, ulama will also help in the application of Islamic precepts. When will they do that? When Islam is in danger. When they feel the image of Islam is being tainted. I'll give you examples. The late Mirza al-Shirazi rahmatullah alayh. That we've all heard his story probably. I'll say it for you. But probably most of you have heard of it. But I'm going to say this because of another story. How he was a marja of his time. Of course, in that time, you didn't have an Islamic revolution or no, but even back then, when was he born? I think it was 1240 AH. Right now we're in 1436. That's almost 200 years ago. He comes up, he hears that there has been a concession has been given to the British. Iran, the Qajar dynasty has given a concession of the tobacco industry to the British. For 50 years, the British can monopolize the tobacco industry. And back then, tobacco was big and huge, they say. Everybody did it. They didn't know it was as bad back then than they do now. Although now that we also know, still it doesn't really matter sometimes. To the extent that people would break their fasts with this, they say. So now you have a marja. Mirza al-Shirazi, after the great, great, great Murtada al-Ansari, he is the marja of the Shia world. And not only the Shia world, Ahlul Sunnah come to him. So, O marja, you want to keep this status of yours? Stick with your wajib and haram and najasa and tahara, and khums and so on. No. People uprise because this monopoly that is being done by the British, it has affected thousands of lives. People's livelihoods are compromised. Word reaches him in Samarra he was in. He tried to go to even Medina to be there. He tried to go to Mashhad, I think. Different places he tried to go to have his marja'iyah. He ended up in Samarra. Word reaches him in Samarra, Iraq, not Iran, Iraq. What did he do? Two lines, very simple. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. From today onwards, any consumption and usage of tobacco and tutun is equal to fighting the imam of the time. Wassalamu alaikum. That's all. He destroyed the industry. But you're a marja. A marja, what does a marja do? A marja sits home and wajib haram, right? No, sometimes when there's a great danger, the ulama have a wazifa to do application of those rules and rulings for the people. Because sometimes the people can't. That's what ulama are for. The great Mirza Shirazi, he destroyed everything. What did they do? They nullified that concession. And it was very bad on the report card of the king of the time of Iran. Very bad for him. But he didn't take his fatwa back either. He said, I'm not going to take it back. I'm going to wait to make sure. Look at this alim. He says, I'm going to wait to make sure that they're not going to give it back. So like 10, 20 days later, he says, okay, from this day forward, you can start consuming again. We're sure that it's been taken out of their hands. That simple. And some say, I haven't really looked into this, but some say that they saw him once crying, the great Mirza Shirazi. Said, why are you crying? He said, now the people know, the enemies know the power of marja'iyah. And what an alim can really do. They're not going to fight the same fight again that they had 100 years ago. What are they going to do? They're going to say, we're going to separate the people from marja'iyah. You can't fight marja'iyah. We tried before, it didn't work. They're smart. We're going to divide. What's the best tool to divide the people from marja'iyah? It's jahl. Is putting the measuring stick, taking it from here, putting it somewhere else, and making something else the measuring stick of haq and batil. Now, what's interesting is, this same Al-Mirza al-Shirazi, rahmatullah alayh, they say his eldest son once was killed. Who killed him? A Sunni killed him. Look at the basira. They came to the Mirza. They said, your son has been killed. He had a grudge, or what it was, I don't know. Some people came. I'm going to underline. Some people came to the Mirza. They said, we want to avenge the death of your son. How dare they? The oldest son of our marja? How dare you? I will spill the blood of that who of he whom disrespects my marja, let alone kills the eldest son of my marja. What did he say in response? This is what an alim is for. An alim is to be able to pinpoint where things are going wrong. An alim like this has spent 60, 70 years of his life in the culture and heritage of Ahlul Bayt. He breathes Ahlul Bayt. It's like if someone comes to you and says, yeah, you know what? Your mom said, I want to kill my son. You say, I know my mom. I've been with her all my life. When she says that, she means something else. They're like, no, she's going to kill you. You say, well, I know what she means. I'm part of her. I've grown up with her. An alim like this, when something happens, he says, I know this is what's supposed to be done here. It's no joke, brothers and sisters. All your life you've breathed Ahlul Bayt. You can easily pinpoint, but others can't. And that's what the alim is for. What did he say in response to these certain people? That some say there was an agenda behind it. that they had come to the Mirza. He says, I want you to listen carefully. You have no right to interfere in any affair of the Muslims. But this is something very personal. Your son has been killed. The son of the leader of the Shia has been killed by a Sunni. It's not a matter of the it's not an affair of the Muslims. But this is how he words it, because he has basira. You gain basira through what? Ilm and amal. He has both. Ilm and amal equals basira. You have no right to interfere in any affair of the Muslims and Muslim lands. Dang, he's even generalizing more. The Muslim lands. He can go on. What has happened is a simple incident that has taken place between two brothers. Subhanallah. This is the culture and heritage of Ahlul Bayt. He's breathing Ahlul Bayt. Right there, they're trying to get Sunni Shia against each other. Very simply, he sees it and he ends it there. He ends it there. This is what an alim does. It's not just wajib and haram, najis and tahir, and so on and so forth. No, there's a lot more to it. What happens if we don't follow the ulama? What happens is, they will raise Qur'ans on spears in front of us. In the Battle of Safin, why? I said this a few nights ago. Why are we having so much trouble? Allama Tabatabai, he says, all the problems the Muslim Ummah faced were because of what happened with this son of Abu Sufyan. We could have gotten in the way of all of that if we had some basira. The Imam, his army, is getting closer and closer to the tent of Muawiyah. Things are going to be wrapped up. The deal is going to be sealed. But because of lack of basira, they force Malik al-Ashtar to come back. Malik says, tell the Imam, he's telling me to retreat. Tell him we're this close, it's all over almost. The Imam says, okay, if you want to finish the job, you can finish the job. But there are thousands of people that have surrounded me and they're waiting to kill me if I don't tell you to retreat. Malik al-Ashtar has to retreat. Basira. Why? What was the problem? Because the Quran was on the spears. And these people are saying, we're Muslim just like you. Look, we're holding the Quran just like you. The Imam is saying, I am the Quran. If we don't follow the ulama of our time, Qurans will be raised on spears. We'll say, this is the Quran. We will be told that Imam Hussein is the red line. Yes, Imam Hussein is the red line. But Imam Hussein is the red line, or the name of Imam Hussein and label of Imam Hussein is the red line. The label of the Quran was on the Quran of the spear, on the spears, not the Quran itself. Yes, Imam Hussein is our red line. He's our red line. If we don't have Imam Hussein, then why live? Why be alive? If we're going to compromise the one thing that we're happy about that we have. The whole problem is, we want to see, is this Imam Hussein? So that we say, okay, this is the red line, or is this a label sometimes? We have to be very careful and precise here. Who tells us this? Ulama tell us this, right? The alim of their time, Imam Ali, told them this is not Quran, but they didn't listen. But the ulama aren't ma'soom. They're not ma'soom. Okay, show me a ma'soom, I'll follow a ma'soom. What's the closest thing to a ma'soom though? And not just one. Even if it's one or two, there's tens upon tens that are supporting them from behind. So much ilm there. It's very hard for this to go wrong and not be the right path. What the ulama are telling us. But unfortunately, we see the opposite. I'm going to give you examples of ulama in the past that we've had. Because of one thing they said, they were attacked. These ulama, by the way, they are the ones who even taught us what tashayyu' is. If we have Imam Hussein today, it's because of them and the likes of them. If they taught us that the Ahlul Bayt have access to Malakutu Samawati wal Ard, and through Quran they prove this to us, If they're the ones who taught us this, they're the same ones that unfortunately, sometimes you see people because of one thing that they said, they go against everything they said. One example is Allama Askari, rahmatullah alayh. This man, his works are impeccable. Ma'alim al-Madrasatain was a revolution. He has photocopies of the letters written to him from our Sunni brothers out there in the world, thanking him for this work of his. Ma'alim al-Madrasatain, the teachings of the two schools. And other books that he has. Khamsun wa mi'a sahabiyan mukhtalaq. He was able to find 150 narrators of hadith that were totally made up. They didn't exist. But they exist in the chains of narrators of some of hadith that are used to prove the Islam, the Umayyad version of Islam. He was able to pinpoint 150. It's impossible. Al-Qur'an al-Karim wa riwayat al-Madrasatain. He has a work on just the Qur'an. And the stuff he's done in this. And so on, other works. He said one thing about something. Not important what it was. But all of a sudden, all these people went against them. Of course, the people, when you look at them, they're the ones who are lacking in their ilm a little bit. And those great scholars who did have a difference of opinion, they had a difference of opinion. Very fine. That's what the Hawza is all about. It's about difference of opinion. They're always debating and academically butting heads in the Hawza. It's perfectly fine. That's how fiqh and Islamic teachings grow. That's perfectly fine. But when you start vilifying, when you start questioning the veracity and the qualification, astaghfirullah. The ulama were here to tell, let us know what's haqq and batil. Now you are the one to tell he is haqq or batil or not. We're going to them to let us know what is haqq and batil. But we're doing it vice versa. No, I have haqq and batil. This alim is batil. It's vice versa, actually. The ulama are there to let us know. Another one. I've heard this story. I haven't seen it myself, but the person I heard it from had heard it from one of the greats himself, apparently, and I'm relating that to you. Sheikh Abdul Karim Al-Ha'iri, the founder of the Hawza of Qum. They say that back in that day, way back, decades upon decades ago, when he started this Hawza of Qum, he added to the curricula. What did he add? Language. English. As I said, I haven't read this myself, but I've heard it from reliable people. English is part of the curriculum. What happened? This might be, I don't know, 80, 100 years ago. I don't remember exactly. They said the merchants of the bazaar, whose khums the Hawza relied on in that day, they came out and they said, if you do this, we will not give you khums anymore. Because, as you know, the Hawza gets its help from the khums of the people. They said, we won't pay our khums to you anymore. Ya Sheikh. And of course, he withdrew. But think about it, brothers and sisters. Take a minute, inshallah, sometime in the future to think about it. If 50 years ago, 60 years ago, English was learned and was also something that they had alongside Arabic or Farsi, think about where we would have been today in the Islamic world. We would be way ahead. But the people of the time, they are the ones to tell haqq from batil, not the alim. The alim is haqq until and as long as what he says reads with what I think to be haqq. And I will help him and support him until then. But from there on, I'm sorry, you're on your own. Think about what difference it could have made. Other ones, Tabatabai's, Mutahari's, so on. If you have a difference of opinion, it's fine. Difference of opinion is fine. But then compromising the whole institution of marja'iyyah. The marja'iyyah of this person, questioning this, that, this alim, that alim. This is what it was for. It was for us to be able to tell haqq and batil through them. They're the closest ones we have to Ahlul Bayt. Which brings us to an important point, brothers and sisters. We're always saying, Ya Hussein, I wish I was with you so that I would also be delivered. This is very good. And if we keep saying this, inshallah, it will be instilled in us. This is good. But we have to remember the tests of yesterday will not be the tests of today. 1400 years have passed. All of these books have been written. All of this scholarship has been done. Today we sit here, we say, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib, they trampled his right. It wasn't this clear back then. Imam Hussein also, it wasn't this clear as it is for us now. It was clear in the sense that this is the son of Rasulullah. It was clear in that sense. But was it clear in the sense that this is the third Imam of Ahlul Bayt that has to be followed? Not necessarily. So now we're sitting here happy that if this test ever comes up for us, we will pass with flying colors. Brothers and sisters, I hate to break it to myself and to all of us, but the tests change a little bit. As man's intellect grows, as we find out more truths, the tests will also change because Allah wants us to grow. You won't grow with a normal test that your body has already adapted to. Those of you who do weights and stuff, you have this concept of plateauing, right? After a while, the body gets used to this type of exercise. They say you have to change it up a little bit from what I hear, or else you won't make any more gains. The tests. If we know the answer to the test, then what point does it make for Allah to test us anymore? No. Allah's going to say, I'm going to do something once again that their aql, if they use it, will understand. But I want to see which will they give precedence, their aql or other things. If you sit down and think for 5 minutes, it makes perfect sense. The ulama are supposed to be followed no matter what because they are ahlul taqwa and ahlul ilm. Which one of these do I have more than them? If you ever have more than them, then bismillah. Alright, now let's move on to today a little bit more. If you noticed over our previous nights, I was giving you examples of how tunnel vision works sometimes and how it messes things up sometimes. Tunnel vision when it comes to a hadith, when it comes to understanding certain Islamic precepts and so on. Not putting all the hadith, relevant hadith together to get the right picture, but looking at one or two hadith, three or four hadith, how that causes trouble. And how it doesn't give us the accurate answer. We said we have to go to ulama for that, right? They know which hadiths nullify other hadiths. Which hadiths break the absoluteness of other hadiths. And restrict hadiths and so on and so forth. We talked about that. Ulama do that. They look at the bigger picture. When it comes to the social or political scene as well, it's the same thing. The ulama, when they look, they see things that we don't see. The same way we can't have tunnel vision when it comes to the theoretical and the practical and what we're living today. Same thing again. Our ulama, that's what they're there for. Mirza Shirazi knew this. Let me tell you a story. Just recently I heard it myself from one of the asatid, one of the teachers of Durus Kharij in Qum. He was talking about the masjid that we have next to the haram of Fatimatul Ma'suma salam alayha. We have a masjid, the big masjid that those of you who have been there, you know what I'm talking about. He says there was a school there before, way during Ayatollah Burujerdi's time. During Ayatollah Burujerdi's time, there was a school there. A hawza there. Now, they want to build a masjid, annex it to the haram, but there's a school here and you have to have permission and so on. And they weren't giving permission apparently. Ayatollah Burujerdi, what does he say? Ayatollah Burujerdi, the one who told Imam Khomeini, slow down. So the point I'm trying to make is that he's not super, you know, political or anything. Or what does he say? He says, go ahead and annex it. They say, oh, we have to give permission. This is land. This is going to be a masjid in the future. I heard this myself from the teacher. Not normal teacher, Ayatollah. He said, Ayatollah Burujerdi turned back and said, then what good is the authority of a alim, of a marja, of a faqih? What good is it then if I can't do this? What do you think it's for? Ayatollah Burujerdi said this. They're there to be able to tell what when there are more, they're able to prioritize. See what the school of Ahlul Bayt has to say regarding priorities. And they tell us. Now, it's up to us to follow or not. Yes, the test will be different. People say, why isn't the Imam coming? Because the Imam has sent representatives and people are turning their back. Very simple. Then sometimes this is what you see. Although those people have good intentions, I'm not saying they're bad people, but we have to get this jahl out of the way or else we won't get anywhere. So, ulama are there for the theoretical. They're there for the practical. Not only that, brothers and sisters, and this is the point I'm going to end on, but it's going to take a little bit. Even in the wording, the ulama are different than normal people. When they say something, every word almost counts. It's different than normal people. They even know how to speak in a way that the interests of the Muslim and Ummah are secured. They know how to even speak. Did you see how Mirza Shirazi, how he worded it? Two lines. He said, the affairs of the Muslimin and the Muslim lands has nothing to do with you. This was something that happened between brothers. It reminds you of actually what Ayatollah Sistani said recently when they were trying to get tension between the sects of our Muslim brothers. He said, they're our brothers. They're not our brothers. They're like ourselves. They know how to even word things. For example, lots of times you see youth, they've lost hope in everything. Why? Why have you lost hope? He says, because I've sinned. Say, but what's wrong with sinning? I know sinning is bad, but come on, what about Tawbah? You know, don't give up. And he'll send you a link on YouTube. You listen to the lecture, you're like, dang, I lost all hope that I had too. The material that's being presented is right, it's accurate, but the wording is wrong. Even the wording is wrong. Remember, a few nights ago, those of you who were here, I said, iqab. There's a difference between iqab, punishment, and istihqaqul iqab, deserving punishment. There's a difference in how our teacher, he held our hand, he said, whoa, don't go on, istihqaqul iqab, not iqab. I won't repeat. Those of you who are here, this is your bonus, you know what I'm talking about. This person has lost all hope just because of the way this person was speaking. But those ulama who know what they're talking about, who have ilm, they will not even speak in a way that will cause hope to be lost or too much hope to be given even. This is also a problem. The wording even. Which brings me to another point. This whole story, it's an example. This whole story of sectarianism. We have enough of it already. We have enough of it. We're tired of it. If there is a problem, we're not going to word it in a way that's going to cause more problems. Lots of our Sunni brothers, they have problems with us because they've been misinformed. Okay. Now we're going to start misinforming our Shia brothers about the Ahlul Sunnah to cause more problems and say, being Sunni is the problem. Can't say it like that. That's not the way the ulama say it. I don't know, I'm a normal person like all of us. That's not how the ulama talk when they talk. Wording has to be very precise. I want to talk about this Sunni thing a little bit more because this is something that is always being talked about and you feel like sometimes the wording is wrong. Brothers and sisters, it's not our Sunni brother's fault. Okay, we can't say that, oh, people in Saudi Arabia who have, you have four imams buried in your country, you have the Prophet buried in your country, how can you still not know the truth? It's not their fault. It goes back to the Umayyad version of Islam. That Islam al-Umawi, who altered history, whose books were altered and touched, When your books don't have certain facts in them, what do you do? Is it your fault? Yes, we get upset sometimes and we say, listen, we're presenting all of this evidence from other books. Plus, use your common sense, please, a little bit more. Please, please. And I talked about this too before. Yes, we get upset in this sense. But at the end of the day, when a person from the age of 2 has been raised in a way that he has been taught that if it's in this book, it was there and it happened. If it's not in this book, it didn't happen. Very simple. And for years and years and years, they've been taught this. You can't expect for them to change so easily. You can't scold so easily. It's not 100% their fault. Even when it comes to the mushrikeen, look at what the Quran says. If you're fighting the mushrikeen and a mushrik comes to you and says, tell me a little bit about, you know, this Islam that you have, that you're fighting us for. Tell me about it. Quran says, take him to a safe place, speak to him, take his hand, put him back in a safe place and leave him. Why? This is the important part. Why? Because these are a people who don't know. It's not their fault. They don't know. Surah Tawbah verse 6, if any of the polytheists seeks asylum from you, grant him asylum until he hears the word of Allah. Then convey him to his place of safety. That is because they are a people who do not know. Yes, lots of them don't know. Where are we putting the measuring stick? How are we going to word it? Are we going to say Sunni? Or are we going to say no? Extremism. That's where our ulama are putting this measuring stick. I don't remember any alim, any great marja wording it like this. But we see that slowly we're moving in that direction. Slowly you hear things here and there that this is the measuring stick now. And if we don't do something about it or talk about it a little bit more, this is going to become normalized, and slowly before you know it, both they have a problem with us and now we have the exact same problem with them. That means bloodshed. That means nothing getting fixed. This is what the ulama are here for. I remember when I was a kid, I was reading a report today actually. And I thought I'd share this with you. Just today. Of a mosque that I wouldn't go to much because it was in another city, but we would go there every now and then. It's still there, alhamdulillah, and still functioning. I was reading a report today from it. Then that same person, he's gotten very old, but he still runs it. It's an interview. They're asking him about his center and so on. He talks about how Sunnis come to their majlis and they cry for Abu Abdullah. They cry for Abu Abdullah, our Sunni brothers. And I'm sure those people who word it in a way that being Sunni is the problem, even them, they don't mean it like that. But this is the problem. An alim knows how to word things. Someone who's not an alim doesn't know how to word things. You get what I'm saying? That's how delicate it is and precise it is. He talks about how they come in. So someone will say, how can they cry for Abu Abdullah but not accept him? Even in Abu Abdullah's time, show me once or twice where Abu Abdullah screamed out to the people that I am the imam of your time. Usually he's saying, I'm the son of the daughter of your prophet. What have I done wrong? And so on and so forth. He's not saying the prophet, he came. After him, Imam Ali came. And then after him, my brother. And now it's me, the imam. You're killing the imam of your time. Did he say it like that? The people of then didn't understand it. You expect the people of now to understand? If he's weeping, he's weeping for the grandson of the Prophet. Perfect, fine, fine. We'll try our best to speak with him more if we get the chance, dialogue and so on. But at the end of the day, he's the problem. He's not the problem. But we're wording it in a way that he's the problem. Or I remember my classmates back in the day when we would go to school, when we were kids. We had different schools of thought. Their kids were coming to the same school that we were in. And some of them, their dads were sheikhs. So they would come to us and say, we've spoken to our dad, a Sunni Sheikh. And he says that Yazid was one of the worst ever. And what he did was wrong. Yes, there's lots of people out there who believe this. But it's the extremist approach which says, no, even Yazid knew what he was doing. And what he did was right. And Hussein ibn Ali, he made the mistake of going against the imam of his time. We have a problem with that understanding, not this understanding. So I'm going to wrap it up. Ulama are the ones to go to for lots of things, to the extent that when it comes to even wording, we go to them to see how they put things, how they say things, because they know this word will instigate this. If you get the measuring stick wrong, no matter how similar it is to the real measuring stick, it'll go off. When you put your fingers like this, yes, the distance is very little here, but as these two lines go, it'll reach infinity distance. Can't say one or two words, oh, what's the difference? No, there's a big difference. Inshallah, we keep this in mind. If we keep this in mind, if we practice this, that's when our mourning for Abu Abdullah also, when it's in accordance with these things, will hasten the return of our Imam, inshallah. Recite salawat. Assalamu alaykum, ya Abu Abdullah. Brothers and sisters, today you've gone out. You've gotten tired for the cause, out of love for Abu Abdullah. Alhamdulillah. I'm pretty sure that every one of us who attended, in some way, in one way or another, the Imam, he comes down, he strokes our head, he says, thank you for coming. Back in my day, no one came to my help. At least you're coming. Of course, the Imam wants more, as I said, ulama. But even this, thank you for coming. We're tired. 10 days weeping, lamenting. Tonight we go home, back to normal life, and it's all over, alhamdulillah. Until next year, wada'an. Wada'an ya Aba Abdullah. Until next year, maybe 40, maybe next year. The journey just begins for Zainab al-Kubra, alayhi salam. What happened? What happened? They finished the job of Abu Abdullah. These wolves, these animals, throughout the day. Throughout the day, their friends are being killed, falling to the ground. Akbar has killed. Abbas has killed with his spear. Habib, Muslim, they've all caused damage. These animals, they're getting hungrier, hungrier. When will Abbas die? When will Abbas die? When will Hussein be finished? We're going to go to the tents. As the day goes on, they get hungrier. They get hungrier. When Abu Abdullah would go to the battlefield, لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله. He lets the tents know. He lets the camp know, I'm still alive. Don't lose hope. Have confidence. Stay in the tents though. Don't come out until I'm alive. Stay in the tents. He comes back to the camp, goes back and fights a couple times. They hear his voice, but all of a sudden, one time, Dhul Janah comes back without his rider. The saddle is on the side. Dhul Janah, it's as if he's gone crazy and mad. He's bloody, he's all cut up. No more voice of Abu Abdullah. All you hear is cheering and clapping from the enemy. These hungry animals begin their attack. Ya Zain al-Abidin, Zainab says, what do we do? Alaykunna bil-firar. Flee, disperse, no more staying in the tents. These children run out, these women run out. Kids, their feet are being pierced by the thorns. Bloody feet of little children whose fathers have been killed on the hot sands of Karbala. One child comes out, they say, he's shocked. He just stands there. The monster comes and beheads him in front of his mother and throws him on the ground. These wolves are hungry. I couldn't kill Abbas. I'll kill that little kid that loved Abbas. Earrings are being torn off. Veils are being pulled off. Children are being trampled. These children don't know where to go. Where is my Abbas to help me now? They burned the tents. Sajjad is even about to be killed. Lady Zainab has to fall on him. If you want to kill him, me first. I don't know how many times they lashed the body of Zainab. You're going to be punished for protecting Ahlul Bayt. How dare you? How dare you try to keep Banu Hashim alive? You have to pay. Strike that back of Zainab. Teach her a lesson. How dare she hide behind Abbas when she ran into the battlefield over the body of Akbar? Where is your Abbas now? But that's not all. There's a place called Darul Harb, a tent that Abu Abdullah would take the bodies of the shuhada one by one. Before the enemy could get a chance to do what they want to do. These animals are hungry for heads. They come to the tent of Darul Harb. The fathers of these children, they're being dragged out. The heads are being severed. Atop the spears, they go. How dare you hide behind Abbas? Where is your Abbas now? We cut him to pieces. But that's not all. Meanwhile, there's a body on the plains of Karbala all alone. Dhul-Jannah, thank you for gently lowering down our master. Because they're not going to be gentle. Do you think they're going to leave this body alone? This body has clothing. We want the clothes. But they don't tear off the clothes just like that. They use the spears to tear off the clothing with the flesh. Ya Sahib al-Zaman, forgive me. They are tearing this body to pieces. They're tearing this body to pieces. Pieces of Abu Abdullah are being spread around. They want all of him. They tear him to pieces. They stone him because of his sin. But that's not all. Umar ibn Sa'd, why are you coming close? Because Abu Abdullah's bones are still intact. Abu Abdullah's bones are still sound. Give me 10 people to trample the body of Hussein. These bones have to be crushed. 10 of the worst, they change the horseshoes. They trample the body on the chest and on the back. They say, we heard the sound of the bones of Abu Abdullah being crushed. What was Hussein sin? Tell me. What was wrong with the chest of Hussein? Tell me. Other than that the Prophet had kissed the tame chest of Abu Abdullah. وَأَنَا السِّبْطُ الَّذِي مِنْ غَيْرِ جُرْمٍ قَتَلُونِ. This body is being thrown around. That's why there is a distance between the grave of Abu Abdullah and where he was killed. The ulama say that this body was trampled so bad that this body was spread out onto the ground. As-salamu ala al-shayb al-khadib. Wa ana as-sibtu al-ladhi min ghayri jurmin qataluni. Thank you. وبجرد الخيل بعد القتل عمدا صحقوني atop the spears, atop the spears, there shines a sun. Who is this son of Abdullah? Looking down on Zainab, reciting Quran. Oh, my sister Zainab, oh, sister, save tears for tragedies to come. My little three-year-old, you will have to bury in Sham. Oh, sister, it was you and me. From Medina to Karbala, now you're all alone. Oh, Zainab, your journey has just begun. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون.